Welcome to this RCGP podcast. My name is Dr. Tony Hazel. I'm a GP and an e-learning fellow for the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Professor Simon de Lusignan, an academic GP with a particular interest in how we can use routine health data to monitor flu and other conditions and to assess the effectiveness of treatments, including vaccines. Simon is director of the RSC, the RCGP's Research and Surveillance Centre, one of Europe's oldest surveillance systems, now in its 55th year of surveillance for flu and other respiratory conditions. The RSC is housed in a trusted research environment called ORCID. ORCID activities range from holding flu surveillance and vaccine effectiveness data through to supporting clinical trials. Simon is also a partner in his practice and will complete 35 years in 2022. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you very much for having me and to have the opportunity to talk about things about which I'm tremendously interested.
So when we were planning this podcast, you asked me if I could prioritise flu vaccination of one group of patients against flu, who would it be? And I gave you the wrong answer. So tell me who you think should be our top priority.
I think pregnant women should be our top priority, as vaccination protects both mother and baby. Pregnant women can be vaccinated against both flu and COVID at any point in their pregnancy. Generally best if this is done early in the season, if one thinks in terms of the flu season. It is also okay to be vaccinated if you're breastfeeding. We have some scope to improve, as under half, around 44% only, of pregnant women were vaccinated in the 2020 to 21 season. Pregnant women are at greater risk of serious illness from flu compared with the rest of the population, and these risks are highest in the last trimester. Mums who've had flu in pregnancy are around four times more likely to have their baby prematurely. Flu can precipitate an early labour and be of low birth weight or even stillborn or suffer a neonatal death. Flu vaccination prevents around 40% of admissions to hospital and the complications of flu. Finally, mothers pass some protection to their babies for the first few months of life.
That's really useful information that we can maybe help to persuade some of our pregnant patients to have their vaccine. So talking about flu in general, what are the lessons that we can learn from last year's flu season?
I think there are some general lessons in how social distancing, masks, lockdown, etc., that took place during the COVID pandemic were associated with a marked reduction in the rates of infection. We didn't detect flu or RSV over the whole of the 2021 winter in a way we'd normally do through our surveillance practices. Interestingly, over this period, we saw much less asthma, though presentations with hay fever were just as high, maybe a little higher than average year. Perhaps it will, in the future, become unacceptable to turn up to work with a florid respiratory infection, perhaps has happened a lot in primary care over previous years. Doctors traditionally don't like taking time off sick, as they know they have colleagues will have to do deal with the work that they're not doing. But if we can continue with a mix of remote and face-to-face working, then it's easier just to swap a day of face-to-face with remote working when you're feeling unwell, and vice versa if a colleague is unwell.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. We probably need to learn the physician heal thyself lesson, because I know we're all rubbish at staying home if we're sick. So how about some lessons to be learned from previous vaccination years? What do we do well and what could we improve?
Well, we should feel pleased with ourselves. We've progressively vaccinated more people year on year. GPs lead, but pharmacists, workplaces and schools all contribute. The 2021 flu vaccination eligibility criteria changed with the age reduced to 50 and was associated again with a higher uptake. Our NHS systems of offering opportunities for vaccination to a range of organisations, as well as being called in by a GP or pharmacist, lowers the barriers to vaccination. This combination of activities helps to facilitate the higher rates of flu vaccination we achieve, and these are better than those achieved in many other European countries. The monitoring of flu infections is conducted using a range of data sources. The primary care data source is the RCGP Research and Surveillance Centre, the RSC, part of the subject of this podcast, and also and the GPs in this network can contribute data to UKHSA's syndromic surveillance data collection. Only the RSC provides primary care virology, which we've done through swabbing over many years. Other than the 2021 season, RSV has usually peaked at the same time of each year, between weeks 42 and 52 at the end of each year. However, flu normally peaks at different times each year. These peaks in flu occurring between year end and March. Generally, we see flu A first and then flu B. It is therefore helpful to go on vaccinating, and we should do this year, right through to when influenza peaks. We could learn from the IT and organisational changes we've made around COVID. If our patients have their COVID vaccination in a mass vaccination centre, that information will automatically make it back into our GP computerised medical records. This includes details of the type of the vaccine and the batch number. The data flows around the COVID PCR testing and transferring results and vaccination reporting had a higher level of digital maturity than that we have set up for flu. If the same patient goes to a pharmacy for the flu vaccination, then we as GPs may be notified by a document that we had to manually enter into their notes, which is time consuming and error prone. It's also like that flu vaccination in an occupational setting, for example, a healthcare professional who might have their flu vaccine performed is under-recorded in our GP records. We may not be properly informed about these vaccinations, and this may weaken our ability to measure flu vaccine effectiveness. In summary, the IT systems reporting the COVID testing and vaccination have been very impressive and could be replicated in what we do for flu.
Absolutely. I completely agree that they seem to have got their act together with the IT. And as the parent of young children who seem to have had hundreds of PCR tests, I was always really impressed when they came back within 12 to 24 hours. So is the lack of flu last year, because we were all self-isolating, going to cause problems for this year's flu vaccination? Because I know it's usually tailored to the expected strain. And presumably, if we've got a year with no data, that will be harder to do.
Yes, quite right. The strain of our annual flu vaccine is usually based on the subtypes and lineages seen in the Southern Hemisphere, who've had their flu season some months before ours. But this hasn't been possible this year. This year's flu vaccination will be very similar to those given last year. If you look at the general pattern of flu subtypes, we generally see influenza A ahead of B. With influenza A, the main subtypes, the H1N1, swine flu, and H3N2. We have recently generally seen 2 years of the H1N1 strain and then 1 year of the H3N2 strain, the H3 year being the one when the vaccine matching is sometimes less good and there are worse outcomes. Influenza generally, but not always, follows on from influenza A. Its common lineages have been Victoria and Yamagata. Flu B generally is a milder illness. But of course, none of this is set in stone. And as we've seen, viruses don't follow any particular rules.
Yes, it would be nice if the COVID virus had followed some of our rules. So let's expand the discussion again to flu and COVID. Can you take me through the issues around having the flu and the COVID vaccine at the same time? Is this a problem?
No, it's absolutely fine to have them together. The antibody response from co-administration is not impaired. Neither of the vaccines are live vaccines, and there's no issue with co-administration causing a lower immune response to either. After all, we know that children get multiple vaccines on the same day, and this is completely safe and effective. Initial suggestion of separation was really just to avoid misattribution of any side effects from vaccines. We've seen, I think, the damage that can be done when false messages are propagated about the claimed dangers of giving a vaccine together, with the obvious example of this being the MMR issues raised back in the 1990s.
Yes, absolutely. And we've seen, I think, now that the issues with some groups of people not wanting to have their COVID vaccine because of false messages. And on that subject, there has been a real issue with pregnant women declining the COVID vaccine, even though, as we've already said, they are at a high risk of both of flu and of serious COVID, particularly in the last trimester. And this probably wasn't helped by a bit of inconsistent messaging at the start. Can you outline what concerns have been raised and why they aren't actually an issue?
We've already discussed the reasons why pregnant women should be vaccinated, but we should re-emphasise the protection the vaccination gives. In November 2021, it was reported that COVID-19 infection in pregnancy was associated with hospitalisation and intensive care admission, just in the same way as flu is. 98% of over 1,500 pregnant women admitted to hospital between February and September 2021 were unvaccinated. So that's 98% unvaccinated. There have been concerns the vaccine might affect fertility, but there remains no evidence of this. One theory was that immunity to the spike protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus would affect fertility. Again, this has not proved to be the case, including in most people who've had COVID. Most natural immunity is actually against the spike protein. And again, this natural immunity is not associated with any change in fertility. Whilst pregnant women were not included in earlier trials, we know that pregnant women have a good antibody response. These antibodies cross the placenta and protect the baby. The COVID vaccine is not a live vaccine, so can't itself infect the baby. Real-world data have not raised any safety concerns, including from over 160,000 pregnant women vaccinated in the United States and 100,000 in England and Scotland. There's no reported impact on miscarriage, early labour or stillbirth.
Thank you. Hopefully those facts will help with GPs trying to counsel their patients who are pregnant and trying to help them get up the confidence to have the vaccine. So finally, coming back to flu, can you tell me a bit about the surveillance system and how it works?
Yes. The RCGP Research and Surveillance Centre, the RSC, is one of Europe's oldest surveillance systems. We intend to celebrate our 55th birthday at the RCGP conference in London next year. We are a network of volunteer practices willing to share pseudonymised data for what we call SQUAR purposes. A SQUAR, the purposes we use data for, stands for surveillance, quality improvement, research and education. Plus, we have an elite subset of practices who are willing to collect virology swabs. These are largely now patients self-swabbing, though we do take some specimens ourselves in practice, and serology blood samples to look for background immunity, particularly at the moment to COVID. There are also opportunities to participate in research, and all the active projects, including surveillance, attract funding. We very much welcome new members. If you're interested in joining, please contact me, or we'll put an email in this, but it's practice inquiries, all one word, at phc.rsc.org. www.oxford.ac.uk, or we also have a link to our website.
Thank you very much. So I think that's all we've got time for today. I'd like to say a big thank you to Professor Simon de Lusignan and to you for listening. If you enjoyed today, please listen to some of our other podcasts. Thank you and goodbye.